Start with the agenda paper 9 series, and I am told that this is both of your first meetings, so you have to be nice to them. You don't have to be nice to Cachero, because his first meeting was yesterday, so you don't have to be nice to him.
Thank you.
Take it away.
Thank you. Good morning. So, Agenda Paper 9 is about investment and fee amendment. The IASB published the amendment last year, and the revised IFRS 10 requires that an investment entity should not consolidate its investees, but measures those investees at fair value. We received the submission, which had various issues. In this November meeting, we tried to discuss issues separately on paper 9A, 9B, and 9C. There is one remaining issue which I'd like to discuss it in January meeting. We are proposing agenda decision to 9B and the first issue of 9C. However, we are proposing amendments to the issues on 9A and the second issue of 9C. Because staff worked on the investment fee and the amendment agree that the amendments are needed on these issues. So let's move on to the paper 9A. So paper 9A is related to investment related service. So investment entity should measure its investees at fair value. However, there is an exception. If investment entity has subsidiary which provide investment-related service, the investment entity should consolidate that particular subsidiary. The question is, if investment entity has subsidiary which provide investment-related service, at the same time, the subsidiary itself is an investment entity with its own investees, how financial statements should be prepared? We explored three separate structures which are clear under the current standards. Then we analyzed structure on the submission, and we noted that there could be various interpretations on the submitted structure. So accordingly, we are proposing amendment on the paper 9A. Thank you.
It occurs to me that I mentioned the fact that we had two staff people here and didn't bother to introduce you. We had Sarah Geisman and Jane Pike, who were the perpetrators. And are here to help us out. So, with that, comments on 9A?
Luca.
Have joined the conference.
Good morning, Luca. We've just started on paper 9A.
Good morning.
Comments on 9A from anyone? Andrew?
I broadly agree with the staff analysis. I think there is a lack of clarity in the investment entity amendments on how to deal with an investee which is itself an investment entity and provides investment related services, what you might term a hybrid entity. So I think this is quite fundamental, because every investment entity by definition provides some form of investment related service to its investors. So I think something needs to be done about this. I'm not sure whether it will be an annual improvement or a limited scope amendment. It's, as the paper suggests, it's not going to be entirely straightforward, because if we decide to consolidate that form of entity, that form of hybrid entity, I think it would need to be a particular form of consolidation whereby you end up with the objective of consolidating the services but having fair value for the underlying investments of the hybrid entity. I note the comment in the paper that it would like to get to the same accounting for all of these structures. I don't think that's always going to be achievable if you introduce some non-controlling interests into those structures. that if you have, say, a 70% interest in a subsidiary which is just an investment entity, then that is your fair value unit of account. If you put that investment into a hybrid entity and you consolidate it, then you're going to end up recognising 100% of the underlying fair value of the investment with a non-controlling interest. But the idea, I think, should be struck as close as possible to the same accounting for these different ways of structuring an investment entity group.
Scott?
I think I agree with the staff analysis. Not sure I saw the need for an amendment there, but I'm certainly not opposed to going through and providing clarity. There was a few things in the staff paper that had me confused. In paragraph 15, discussing example structure 3, there's a sentence that says the financial statements of the investment entity would be consistent with the example structure 1 and 2. That led me to believe that I'm misunderstanding something. I thought in structure 3, entity A would reflect entity C at fair value, but would not reflect the portfolio of investments under entity C, if entity C had controlled companies that it was investing in. So that the financial statements of entity A in structure 3 would not be the same as the financial statements of entity A in structure 2. Is that correct?
Well, I stumbled on that too. Now you're...
Unless you mean portfolio of investments to be non-controlled investments.
Which the little asterisk says investees managed on a fair value basis, which meant I assumed they weren't.
Well, it's a controlled company.
Controlled company.
But in investment entities reflect controlled companies on a fair value basis as well.
Okay, yeah. Point taken.
So I wasn't sure I was following, but I didn't think you would get the same answer for Structure 3 as you would for Structures 1 and 2 unless you stipulated that the investments were simply straightforward investments in securities. But barring that misunderstanding, like I said, I think I agree with the staff analysis, and adding some clarity would be good.
Tony?
Yeah, I think I'm in the same place as Andrew and Scott. I think it would be, I'm comfortable with the staff analysis. I think it makes sense to provide some clarity around how the mechanics of consolidation work in those circumstances. Additional thought is around whether it would also be helpful to clarify the extent to which the investment services need to be provided in order to result in consolidation. I think we've begun to see plenty of examples of investment services that some might regard as being purely incidental. Mm. And I think it just, to an extent, opens the door for structuring.
Charlotte?
I agree with the staff analysis. I think it's a problem. I'm not convinced I'd want to go down the hybrid way simply because I can see that in practical terms that would be a nightmare. But it'd be interesting seeing what other proposals there are.
Joanna?
Whilst not disagreeing with the staff analysis, I'd like us to be very careful about going forward as to exactly what, and therefore would like to see what the proposed amendment is, because the thought of actually specifying different types of consolidation, so a hybrid type of consolidation, some of it you consolidate and some of it you fair value, I have to admit, worries me and scares me. And you know, the ability around structuring and then setting some rules. So I just think we've got to be, I'd like to see the next step before committing, and encourage you to be as simple and principle based as you can on those.
Okay. With Joanna's caution, hopefully.
Well, I suggest to the staff that in developing the draft of the amendment, you take into consideration, as probably Tony suggested, the materiality, because investment services can be material, and then that must be consolidated as an activity of the group. But if it is really immaterial, to change the whole idea of fair value accounting for investment because of a small activity in investing doesn't really make sense.
I've already illustrated my ignorance once this morning, and it's only 10 after 9, so I asked this question with some trepidation, but I would not have thought when I read the amendment that investment services contemplated what the nice people across the street do with their mutual funds. I buy one of their mutual funds, I own units in it, but I don't think I'm getting a lot of investment services. I would contrast with a situation where I go to somebody and say, I will pay you £1,000 for your advice. I think that's investment services. And I'm getting head nods from the co-perpetrators down there. Okay. I'm batting 500 now at 10 after 9. So. Except Philippe's going to disagree with
that. In buying the units in the fund, you pay a fee on top of that. And the fee remunerates the fact that the fund or the fund manager will pick and select investments in certain entities rather than others. Only if they try to follow an index and just replicate the FTSE, then there is probably not much of value in that. But if they really do stock picking in the fund and you pay a 3% fee per annum on your investment, don't you get any investment advice in a way?
Well, are you saying then that all of their funds would have to consolidate? They're prohibited from owning a big enough piece of anybody to actually have to, so it's not a problem. But
that would be an investment service, I guess.
Something of a question that was running through my head. I agree with Philippe. I think there are investment services there. The manager is analyzing what to invest in and making picks there. So I would have thought that is investment services. In the example, we've got A, an investment entity owning B, and B is an investment entity and provides investment services as well. I was not sure whether B was providing investment services only related to its own investments or was providing investment services related to Entity A's other investments as well, and if that made a difference. Because we know that the regular definition of an investment entity would include providing investment services. And if that's the case, if providing investment services related to your own investments causes a parent to have to consolidate you because there's investment services rather than just flow through the, reflect your fair value, I think that is a big difference. One of the things we might explore. One of the things we might explore is whether the consolidation is required only if Entity B is providing investment services related to Entity A's other investments.
Providing to third parties or anybody else,
And that would be
I think
fine
that's
what
as well. Says at the moment.
Yeah, going back to the discussions originally, the intention was that yes, an investment entity is automatically providing some of those investment related services because that's part and parcel of managing the investment portfolio.
Right.
The discussion about the investment related services and the consolidation of a separate entity originally was where that subsidiary was providing investment-related services to other members of the group.
Mm-hmm.
So the structures that you're seeing in example, structure two, for example, the investment-related services there is an entity that is designed to provide services
right.
to other members of the group or externally, because that was added quite late in the discussion when we were developing the amendment. So in structure two, investment entity B isn't an investment entity in itself because it's not got the investment portfolio. It's designed to provide those services to the other members of the group.
But in the structure illustrated in paragraph 6, which is, I think, what was written in, The example is simply A owns B, B has investments. There's no indication that A has any other investments.
Yes.
I suspect that we are supposed to assume that A has other investments and that entity B is providing investment services related to those investments as well, or to third parties, but that's not stated anywhere. I made the assumption, but then when Wayne asked the question, it brought back to mind that I had thought about that for a while.
Does it matter to whom the services are being provided? It wouldn't, in Structure 2, we would consolidate Entity B if it's providing investment services, whether they relate to just the portfolio in the blue box or they're provided to unrelated third parties. That's permissible as well within the overall definition. So if the objective is to get comparability as far as possible among different structures, then we shouldn't make a distinction based on whether we're servicing our own portfolio or providing services to the parent company or to third parties.
But that would suggest, as Wayne did, that investment entities should always consolidate other investment entities because there's always investment services involved.
Which cannot be what was meant.
Yeah, and I think the intention kind of the amendments is that the subsidiaries that should be consolidated are those, as Jane says, that wouldn't meet the definition of investment entities themselves. These are not directly investing. They're just an extension of that core investment function of the parent investment entity.
Well, in that case, you disagree with the staff analysis.
In what?
Isn't entity B in the submission an investment entity?
Yeah, well, and what we're saying in the staff analysis is that for that structure, it's not clear. I was more talking about example structure 2.
Yes, example structure 2, I think, is very clear, but the one we're dealing with is the one where the...
That's a clarity.
Investment entity subsidiary also provides investment services. And I think I just heard you say you don't think that would be...
No. When I was saying it wasn't an investment entity, I was talking about example structure, too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the difficulty with the example structure in paragraph 6 is that entity B is the hybrid entity.
Mm-hmm.
And the other example structures, we've tried to split out the different activities to try and explain how we're trying to get to comparability.
This conversation suggests that clarity might be helpful.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I hear a lot of support for the staff recommendation, so I'm not sure we're gaining anything by...
Who's proving the staff right?
Yeah, well... Charlotte, last call. Okay, I hear general support for the staff recommendation, so I assume we will now see it in real life at a future meeting.
Okay. Thank you very much.
9B?
Yes. So, agenda paper 9B is also related to the exception to consolidated subsidiary which provide investment-related service. But this case is very, very specific. Submissions present a very specific structure. So some investment entities establish wholly owned intermediate subsidiaries in certain jurisdictions. I suppose mostly on tax haven, and which own the portfolio of investment in the group structure. The whole purpose of the intermediate subsidiary is to minimize tax paid by investors in the parent investment entity. There is no activity within the subsidiary, and tax advantage came about simply by virtue of returning channeled through the jurisdiction. That's it. So that is the particular structure. The question is, if the tax optimization subsidiary, as stated on the submission, should be consolidated or measured at fair value. And we noted that the board discussion specifically addressed this point, and which is on the basis of conclusion BC 272. Accordingly, we propose agenda decision on 9B.
Comments, reactions? I'm seeing no's, which I mean no, take to mean no comment, and yeses, which means I take to mean agree, and a couple of people want to talk. Reinhardt?
I agree with the staff's conclusion, but I think it was
Andrew mentioned, and then also Tony mentioned, there's a broader issue here in terms of what is contemplated by investment-related services, because by definition, I think as Andrew said, an investment entity does investment management, and that's given as an example of an investment-related service. So I think it would be helpful to look at that issue perhaps in conjunction with the previous paper as to how does that relate to each other and how does that impact the consolidation question. And then the other comment I would make is that our experience and practice is that often in these structures, those entities formed for tax purposes do other things besides just protect holding investments. They may do brokerage services, et cetera. So again, the question is how much of that is incidental or how does that taint the consolidation?
Okay. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you very much. We think that's a very, very valid point. And the tax optimization can be like a different meaning. However, we noted in this particular submission, it has a very specific structure and it explicitly says there is no activity in the subsidiary. So based on that, we are proposing the agenda decision. And the agenda decision is very careful about this particular point. Thank you very much.
John?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the agenda decision, but same point as Reinhardt. I think there's a broader issue about what are investment-related services and how much of that type of service is enough to qualify it as an investment-related service, because of the arbitrage that's actually created by whether they do exist or they don't exist. So I think there's a broader issue, but I agree with the staff's analysis on this issue.
Martin?
I agree with the staff recommendation. However, probably it would be good to have a clear distinction between tax optimization and tax advisory, because, I mean, we all know that we're not talking about tax advisory, which happens within the entity.
Point taken. Andrew?
Yeah, I agree with the staff analysis as well, so that's the comments that others have made on clarity on investment-related services. Just in terms of the drafting, I didn't think it was helpful to use the phrase pass-through entities in the penultimate paragraph, because that could be taken to imply we would look through this entity and fair value its underlying investments, which I don't think is where the guidance takes us. I think we just fair value the entity, the tax optimization entity, and don't look through it. And just to add further weight to the staff analysis, I thought we could also cross-refer to example 4 and the implementation examples.
Points taken. We'll pick those up. Anybody else? Philippe?
Nothing, but when the staff writes something like the board thinks that, maybe you should refer to some basis for conclusions. What are the evidence of where this thinking is expressed? Because how can you know what the board thinks if it is not expressed?
So we want to cross-refer to the paragraphs in the data. Point. Valid point. Okay. You're on roll. 9C.
Thank you very much. So, agenda paper 9C has two separate issues. And we propose agenda decision for the first issue. On the other hand, we propose amendment for the second issue. The issue is related to the exemption to present consolidated financial statements. Paragraph 4 of IFRS 10 states that a parent need not present consolidated financial statements if the parent meets certain conditions. One of the conditions is if the ultimate or any intermediate parent produces consolidated financial statements that are available for public use and comply with IFRS. Please look at diagram on page 5 of agenda paper 9C. In this case, ultimate parent is an investment entity. However, the parent prepares consolidated financial statements because one of the subsidiary, which is entity B, provides investment related service. But the parent does not consolidate entity B, C, E, F. Instead, the parent measures these subsidiaries at fair value. The question is, the entity B can apply the exemption to prepare consolidated financial statements? We think the answer is yes, because paragraph 4 of IFRS 10 just states if like ultimate parents prepare consolidated financial statements. So the paragraph does not specify what kind of consolidated financial statement. Accordingly, we are proposing the agenda decision. Regarding the second issue, please take a look at a diagram on page 7 of agenda paper 9C. This case is different from previous one because it does not have a subsidiary which provides investment-related service. So the ultimate parent does not present consolidated financial statement. In that case, entity B would not apply the exemption based on the wording of paragraph 4 of IFRS 10. We do not believe these two cases are like substantially different, and it would not be appropriate to require different treatment to these two cases. So we are proposing amendment for the second case. Thanks very much.
So we have actually two recommendations here, am I correct?
Yes.
So we've got a don't and a do.
Yes.
Comments, questions? Laurence.
I am bothered by the fact that whether the intermediary parents should prepare consolidated accounts is triggered by the fact, by the nature of its sister's companies. It is the sister's company that would decide whether the parent, the ultimate parent, prepares consolidated accounts, and this will trigger whether the intermediate entity shall prepare consolidated accounts. This is not how things have operated, how the exemption has operated in the past. So I think it would be clearer just to go for an amendment of the standard to clarify whether or not entity B is required or not to prepare consolidated accounts. I think that at the moment the fact that we have an agenda decision is not appropriate. It's not looking at the right angle to the issue.
I didn't understand you. Maybe I was drifted, but when you say it's not the way that exception is operating in practice today, I didn't understand what you were saying there. How is it operating?
Today, you are exempted from preparing consolidated accounts at the intermediate level as long as the parent prepares consolidated accounts.
Right.
But if you are a subsidiary, this means that the parent must prepare consolidated accounts. You trigger the requirement to prepare consolidated accounts. It doesn't matter whether there are any sister companies or not that trigger the requirement to prepare consolidated accounts.
Consolidated accounts that include you, the subsidiary.
Okay.
Question. Yeah.
That's what I didn't follow. Scott?
I think the staff has correctly read the literal words in the standard, and there is no way that that's what the board actually meant. I could be wrong. We have board members here that can tell me otherwise. I think the staff has correctly read the words in the standard that if Entity A prepared consolidated financial statements because Entity D happened to exist, then, well, technically Entity B is exempt because its parent provided consolidated financial statements. I don't think there's any way that's what was supposed to happen. I think it is absolutely the case that Entity B should only be exempt if Entity B was consolidated in parent company financial statements. It makes no sense to exempt Entity B from having to prepare consolidated financial statements in a situation where Entity B's accounts have not been reflected in Entity A's consolidated financial statements. The basis for conclusions that allowed the exemption in the first place talked about how the information about the intermediate subsidiary slash parent would be available in the parent company financials. Well, that's not the case in the example, because entity B being entity A being an investment entity just reflected entity B at fair value. There was no information about entity B's accounts in entity A's financial statement. So I think that we should propose an amendment, but it should be the opposite of the one the staff is proposing. The staff's proposing an amendment that exempts entity B from preparing consolidated financial statements, whether entity B exists or not. I would say that entity B should be required to prepare consolidated financials, whether entity B exists or not. So I'd go the other way.
Assuming it's not an investment entity itself.
Well, but yes, that's right. Well, that's absolutely correct. Well, if entity B is an investment entity, then entity B never has to prepare consolidated financial statements. We're all done. We don't need an exemption.
In fairness to the board members, I don't believe any of them were on the board. when the exception was crafted, this was back in 2003. Please, go ahead.
To be honest, I don't have a clear recollection of any discussions on that point, but I think what you say, Scott, makes sense. But I don't recall any specific discussions. But I think it's the overall philosophy that information should be provided at either the intermediate level or at the parent, ultimate parent level.
Yeah.
The information on the contents of that group should be presented somewhere and not twice. So if it is not presented by entity A, then it must be presented at the level of entity B. I have an extra, an additional question. What happens in real life very often that entity D will be deemed to be not material to the group, will not be consolidated on the basis of not being material. What happens then? There is no real consolidation at the level of A because of the exemption to not consolidate immaterial subsidiaries. Does that change, or is that something you would add to the analysis and to the explanations?
Yeah, as I remember the conversations, and this was part of the 03 amendments, the so-called improvements amendments, all our discussions were linear.
Sure.
So we didn't think about somebody else sitting over here in the structure. They were all about linear structures.
And you didn't have investment entity guys in the system. Well, we could have even brought this issue up.
Could be. Okay. Andrew, did you want in, or have I just left your button, your light on? Okay, I just left your light on. Joanna?
I was going to say the same thing as Scott. I think you've literally read the standard. The second thing that I'm clear on is I don't think we can separate the two issues and do an agenda decision for one. And like, to me, they are too combined to do them separately. In terms of the actual what should the answer be, I think I'm on the same page as Scott in terms of if B does have subsidiaries, that in a normal, if before the investment entity stuff came in, would be consolidated in the group. I think that the investment company B does need to do a consolidation. If there is required, because the reason, coming back to that 2003, why are we exempting people from do it? Because that information is shown somewhere. So you don't have to repeat it 10 times over in your scale going down, and it is all about that entity. The fact that you've got D or anything else is irrelevant. It's about those entity E and entity F to be able to show those, using your example on page 5, coming through in terms of that being consolidated somewhere. So I think I'm on the same page, as opposed to my alternative was actually to say, well, actually, if you like, entity A, doing fair value, it's not consolidated, but arguably they are the group accounts, and therefore you could say, well, actually they are producing the results of the group as you need to know them, therefore you don't need to show, you know, what's actually in entity E and F. So I was torn between those, but I think actually the reason for the exemption in the first place was I'm in Scott's camp.
Tony, Charlotte, John. and then we'll come back to Andrew.
I particularly agree with what people have said. I don't think we can split it in two. I think that has to distill a principle from this as to what is the reason for not preparing consolidated accounts at B or preparing consolidated accounts at B, and I don't really think it makes any difference whether there is a subsidiary there or not.
Yeah.
And I think that's perhaps the key next step, is to distill that principle and then come back and say, well, this is why we think the answer is X, and then that answer should be applied across the range of circumstances that you've got.
Good point. Charlotte?
I thought you got it right, but I'm not sure if it's that was what it was intended, and I would agree with anyone else. I think there is a belief that consolidated accounts give more information, so they should be done somewhere. I would also be uncomfortable, interested in how the sort of issues in this paper sort of combine with the issues in the paper 9A and the structuring opportunities as to how you set up your structure to get the optimum consolidation result, and not necessarily optimum for the users. So.
John?
I think staff have read the literature correctly. I don't think the entity itself has to be consolidated on a line by line basis for the exemption to be available. I also think that there should be symmetry between whether you prepare consolidated accounts because you have an investment related services subsidiary or you don't. I would lean towards not providing the exemption, because I think the basis for the exemption is that the information is incorporated and included within the consolidated financial statements, and with investment entity accounting it's not. Therefore, I think I would do the opposite amendment to the one that's proposed by the staff.
That seems to be the consensus that's developing. Andrew?
Oh, I'm afraid I'm going to row against the consensus and support the staff. I'm part swaying slightly based on the debate that's taken place so far, but I started out supporting the staff analysis, and I think that's where I remain for the time being. Partly because I feel this idea that you're going to get the information about the intermediate parent company by looking at the consolidation of the higher level parent company superficially attractive, but actually somewhat specious. You're not going to get that information, as a matter of fact, particularly in the circumstances that Philippe pointed out, where we're actually dealing with an intermediate parent entity which is immaterial to the higher level parent entity. So I think that's an illusory distinction, quite honestly. What the board intended is lost in the mist of time, probably not contemplated in conjunction with, well, clearly not contemplated in conjunction with the investment entity amendment. And I find the idea that introducing specialist investment entity accounting for the higher level parent company should create a requirement on the intermediate parent to consolidate where it didn't consolidate before, I find that unattractive.
I think my recollection, and this was a point that was raised, as I recall, by Bob Garnett, was that you had jurisdictions developing, and in his particular jurisdiction was South Africa, in which all of the subsidiaries were required to prepare IFRS-compliant financial statements. And so his concern was that you would have this cascading consolidation time and time and time and time and time again for financial statements that were going to go in some file drawer someplace and weren't really provided to users.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I said in response to Scott, we were thinking of that kind of a linear relationship. We never thought about somebody else hanging over here on another branch of the tree triggering it. So I think Scott was correct there. Scott?
I was just going to say, to the beginning of Andrew's last comment, that the argument that you can get the information about the subsidiary from the parent being illusory or specious, I tend to agree with that, and therefore would support eliminating the exemption altogether. But that's not really part of this project.
Okay. I think I hear general support for not doing what the staff recommended. Seems to me we have a package of issues now that have to come back on all three papers.
Can I suggest that when we do that, we do just bring a brief analysis about what the consequences of that decision are versus the alternative. And the reason I just raised that is that the actual exemption from consolidation is only permitted when that intermediate subsidiary is wholly owned, or if it's partly owned but the other shareholders have agreed or not objected to consolidated financial statements. Plus, there is no public debt or equity issued by it. So it is a very limited set of circumstances. And the results, well, not the results, but that entity and its subsidiaries are effectively provided by fair value in the top co, which obviously the board has decided is appropriate reporting in the case that it's an investment entity.
Yeah, and I think that was Joanna's point, that the fact that you didn't consolidate some of your subs doesn't mean that they're not group accounts.
Yeah. Joanna, did you have something else, or was that true?
Well, effectively, I was going to add in bringing it back. I think you do need to, I mean, just looking at the basis of conclusions, okay, it's very limited in terms of that 2003. I think you do need to bring back as to which one is the right answer, as opposed to just assume that we've got it right today.
You mean the staff might disagree?
Yeah.
Andrew, last word.
Sure. If we're going to look at this exemption again, I suspect it's sort of just include some thought about if the intermediate level parent company was classified as held for sale by the higher level. I know technically that's described as consolidation, but it's consolidation not as we know it. So I don't suspect that question might come up if we don't address it.
Okay.
You're talking about bringing IFRS 5 into this too, then?
Well, I just think there might be some collateral damage if we don't.
Okay. Point taken. But you have more work to do.
Right. If all three of us.
We do.
Okay. Who do we have next on that? Leonardo?